Yes, we believe the Bible is completely true and inerrant, and God fed the people of Israel with manna and gave them water out of a rock, and you darn well better stockpile water, because otherwise you're going to be out of luck. Okay, these are mutually exclusive statements.
Interface. Not the same questions, not the same answers.
Hello, I'm Brad Johnson, and welcome to Interface, a weekly examination of Christian perspectives on theology, philosophy, ethics, and culture with Adam Ayers, the pastor of Disciples Church in Costa Mesa, California, and the founder of the Stoa Foundation. Today in the studio, we have with us Brian Griffith and Jay Gaddis, and we've come together today to discuss the year 2000 and the Y2K problem. We've heard that it's... If society does not end when all the zeros hit and the sun doesn't go nova and all that business, that we're going to have some terrible problems with our computers. So let's discuss that today. What is the big deal about the year 2000?
I think I can take that, Brad. When computers started to really expand into big business, they were based on very centralized systems, mainframes, mini computers. All the components of those computers were very expensive. So cost-cutting measures including as little memory in those components as possible. So they decided to save memory space by only using 2 digits for dates, because you stored incredible amounts of dates. Every document would have a date. Any kind of database entry would have a date. And so rather than 4 digits, they said, well, let's just use 2 digits. These computers surely won't still be around by the year 2000, knowing that it would cause problems if they did last that long, but just assuming that, sure, this technology is going to be outdated and people aren't still going to be using it. Well, needless to say, those systems were so expensive that companies kept hanging on to them and kept upgrading them and kept adding more to them and improving their functionality and basically perpetuating this 2-digit date system. So that now they've got these colossal computer systems all based on a 2-digit date, and they're so expensive that they don't want to replace them still. And come year 2000, these computers will not work.
Why won't they work?
Well, all of a sudden the computer will think it's 1900, and it will become very confused. And I don't understand exactly why it breaks a lot of computers on a technical level. But when it rolls around to 00, often those 00 codes are built into the system as not a valid date, or even 99, or like the full date. Like if you had 9999, that could be considered an error code or some kind of special code they went into the system. So actually, you can start having Y2K problems before the year 2000, because you start getting these odd numbered dates like 99999, and they may have programmed that into the system as a special kind of code that if you put that in the date field, it tells the system to shut down or that there's an error, these kind of things. And in addition to that, they're also not just these large mainframe systems, but they also built what we call microcontrollers that are very small, specialized chips that go in all sorts of manufacturing equipment or just devices in general that only use the 2-digit dates and will stop working.
Yeah, like pacemakers.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, that's your area of specialty, right, Brian, is hospital and healthcare software.
It is.
How does this thing affect you?
Well, I mean, whenever you get into the healthcare business in any way, it's mission critical. So I think the CIOs and CEOs and CFOs and healthcare facilities all over America are scrambling right now because most of them are just getting up on email. And they're wondering why their computer budgets are going, their software, their hardware, and service budgets are going through the roof.
Okay. So what kind of problems would that cause in your field?
It's a total restructuring for most hospitals right now are having to go back to the drawing boards and bring in all kinds of new applications and really start over. Yeah.
There you go.
So
some of us out there still think of computers as large typewriters that erase themselves when you make mistakes. Okay, that's like my view of computers typically.
No, some people are just scared of computers, Adam.
Yeah, that's true. And some people are just ignorant.
Yeah, I'm
like
one
myself,
of them too.
You know?
One of them too. But what it's done is it's presented a real problem in a sense that it's made everyone stop in their tracks from a business standpoint and have to address it and spend all this money on this particular two-digit problem and not be able to address the strategic business needs that they have at the present time. So I think it's going to be pretty bad from a business perspective in the States, to say the least.
That kind of leads us into sort of the meat of our discussion. We have brochures here from Christian organizations. The cover shows an hourglass. Thank you. That's what you call those. I'm thinking, that is not a sundial. <That's>, shows an hourglass here. And then it says, Y2K, time is running out. It's time to find out what to do when the chips are down conference. Prepare now for the new millennium. With the year 2000 computer crisis quickly coming upon us, the time has come to begin our preparations. Blah, blah, blah. Bring into focus a balanced and strategic perspective in light of the approaching crisis. There's a lot of dialogue happening, and for a while it's been happening in the Christian community and now more in the secular community, about crisis and about the implications of the Y2K problem and what could or might happen when all the clocks click to zero and the great new age begins, or you know,
we all turn to Planet of the Apes.
Of the age. No, sorry. All right, a lot of speculation about what is going to happen when the clocks roll. In your experiences, what are some of the speculations with which you are familiar? Things that might happen that this crisis, what might be precipitated?
It's really interesting in that it's a very unique situation. Here we are in this new technological age that we've fashioned for ourselves that's revolutionizing the world, et cetera, et cetera. And all of a sudden, here's our first big speed bump in this new era we've fashioned with computers. We've become so dependent on them in every industry, at least in America and in most of the developed world, that we don't know what's going to happen when a certain percentage of those systems fail, especially when we're not sure what percentage and in what industries and how we're going to work around that. And we won't really know what impact that's going to have until, like you said, till the clocks roll over to zero. Well, there's lots of speculation, and every expert has a different opinion.
Well, Jay, why can't they just fix it? Why can't they just test? What's the problem? Because, I mean, if we know what the problem is, why don't we just fix it?
If it were only
we're Americans,
that.
Aren't we? We're industrious.
That's right. Yeah, we get such great suggestions is, why don't we just redo the century, which doesn't work. But these systems are so complex, and the functions they serve are so ingrained that you can't just rip that system out and replace it. And analyzing that system to figure out where its Y2K dependencies are is a huge task. You have to go into all the program code and find every situation where there's a date that's not Y2K compliant, and you have to figure out how to fix it.
Line by line.
Line by line.
Now, what do you mean when you say line by line?
Well, the way the code's written is that there's a line of code, and in that code, if there's a date, it's got to be checked. So, I mean, they're supposed to be – in fact, I know of several products that can fix it. But the problem is you still have to have someone go back and look at it, and it's still got to be tested. So it's a people problem. It's a resource problem.
Absolutely.
It's not necessarily a problem that people don't understand or have a grip on, which is why, you know, the Social Security has 400 people working 7 days a week.
Okay. So now we get down to a little bit of the dialogue that takes place in our community. Worst case scenarios. What could happen?
Well, worst case?
What happens in third world countries where they don't have the resources to fix this at all? They can't even address it. I think it's going to be an issue in those countries where they don't have the resources. Here, we can go and get all these old COBOL programmers or what have you, but they can't do it.
I agree. I think the crisis is going to be biggest outside of the United States. In countries that have developed a dependence on technology but can't afford to fix it now.
Okay, when you say the problems, what are you talking about? What kinds of failures are you talking
like,
about?
I mean like the fact that your computer systems that control your power plants are going to become non-functional come year 2000 and all your power is going to go out.
Okay.
Your
water supply is going to go out. And all your computers that schedule your shipments of food and your phone systems are going to go out. And, you know, so you're not going to have any food distribution. You're not going to have any water. You're not going to have any communication.
So that's the worst case
scenario. Unless
you
have backups. But, you know. Now, who has backups?
Now, here we go. Now we're into this. I know it's taken a little while there to get to it, but we're here. So we'll say that the speculators of the worst kind of gloom and doom are correct. We hear much talk about the complete collapse of food and water and power.
Mm-hmm.
And much talk about Christian preparedness. How does this meet up with Christ's view on what human life should be, how Christians are to address issues of the future, issues of preparedness, issues of trust, hope, and faith, as compared to issues of preparedness, shrewdness, and fear? How do we deal with this? We'll say that there's, for example, what comes to my mind is, okay, we lose all of our electricity, we lose all of our water supply, we lose all of our food supply. What that reminds me of is going camping. So we're all going camping. What's the big deal? What is this?
Well, yeah, 12 million people in Los Angeles camping.
Okay.
And there's no longer any food in the snack machines.
Okay.
Well, then it comes down to what kind of human natures are you dealing with?
All right. So what do you guys see? You guys are both Christians, and now we're going to kind of pull back the curtain for our listeners. You, Jay, not only are you a computer consultant as a career, but you have the added qualifications of being in the process of finishing doctoral-level psychology studies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from your perspective as a student of psychology and an expert in that field, compared with your computer consulting career, that's very an odd combination to be both
a
technophile and an anthrophile, you know? So mm-hmm. It's very, very interesting to see that you understand people and machines.
Mm-hmm.
How does this psychology of fear and dread play into this whole Y2K thing?
It really does come to be all about fear. Whether we lose massive services or minimal services come year 2000, the real crisis is going to be whether or not people panic or whether they stay calm. And there are so many factors that go into that. How is the media going to jump on this ball?
I mean, do you think El Nino was a bad
media
event?
You know, are they going to—
A warm water current gets, like, highest news for 10 months. And now, you know, this latest thing, we still have a year and a half of media coverage to go on this.
It'll just get more and more intense.
Yes, and that's a pretty scary thing. You know, are they aware of how they're going to influence
people?
Will
the TVs black out?
We can only hope.
Some peace.
Keep going. I'm sorry.
If they hype it and panic people— then you could have a real bad situation.
You mean if people run on banks?
Oh, yes, exactly. If they run on banks, if they run on the supermarkets, if they all try to withdraw cash before the year 2000, within a short period of time.
Say you have a Christian who's saying to people, what you need to do is prepare, go withdraw your money from the bank. Is this precipitating the crisis or is it preparing for the crisis? We'll say that the Christian community responds and all the Christians go out and withdraw their money and decide to buy gold. Mm-hmm. You know, Krugerrands or something with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the banks collapse.
Mm-hmm.
Have the Christians, under the guise of preparedness, actually created and precipitated a crisis based on fear?
Oh, certainly. And certainly. I mean, there's a fine line between preparedness and creating the crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you have to walk that. If you can't be naive and say, nothing's going to happen, I'm not going to need a little extra food and a little extra cash— come year 2000, but if...
Why can't you be naive and say that?
Because I think you'd be...
Naive.
Yes. Be naive.
So and, what's wrong with naivete?
Well, where's wisdom? Where does wisdom have her place in this?
I'm just thinking about the words of Christ. It says, you know, give no thought for the morrow shall take thought for itself. Sufficient to the day is the evil thereof. Or consider the sparrows, you know? They don't work. They don't toil. Consider the lilies of the field. They don't spin, yet Solomon in all of his glory was not arrayed like unto one of these.
So I shouldn't watch the news and the 5-day forecast and figure out what to take on my vacation? I should just let tomorrow plan for itself? I mean—
Is our wisdom wiser than Christ's advice or Christ's demands? Those are commands as much as thou shalt not murder, said by the same person.
Well, then again, the wise man sees destruction and finds a safe place. Mm-hmm. Which is a proverb that I just changed around my own words, but I think there's a place for wisdom, mm-hmm. But there is a fine balancing act that you walk. Mm-hmm. If you don't hear from the Lord and you move out and buy gold and get a house in Montana and get guns, you're going to have some real issues.
Here's the question that comes to my mind, Brian, with that. Is the destruction that one foresees the destruction of one's financial welfare? Or is the destruction that one foresees the destruction of one's soul for worry and disobedience to Christ? Which is the destruction that we foresee and guard ourselves from? I'm not convinced that the wisdom that foresees evil hides itself, but fools pass on and are destroyed. I'm not convinced that that wisdom is the wisdom which protects the body and the possessions, but wisdom which protects the soul and the heart and the vibrant life with God. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because, for example, if Christians seek to protect themselves, like this Y2K thing, and they make a run on banks, and they then precipitate a crisis that brings about a financial downfall, have we or have we not been selfish and greedy and precipitated a crisis which destroyed our neighbor?
Absolutely. See, and that's what I would say. That
under the guise of protectionism.
A Christian preparedness would involve community activism, saying, how is our community going to pull together around this and support each other and prepare? And thinks about not just how am I going to protect me and my family and my possessions, but how am I going to look out for my neighbor? Is my neighbor preparing? And if maybe they're not, maybe I buy 2-3 times more than I need.
But again, the question that I ask is preparedness a Christian mandate to worry about the future? Or is preparedness preparedness of soul? For example, are we or are we not people who hold that God fed 1 million people in the desert with food that appeared on the ground in the morning and gave them water to drink out of a rock? Okay? Now, at the same time, we are people saying, yes, we believe the Bible is completely true and inerrant, and God fed the people of Israel with manna and gave them water out of a rock, and you darn well better stockpile water because otherwise you're going to be out of luck. Okay, these are mutually exclusive statements to say we are persons of faith who believe that our God will provide for us, but we better provide for ourselves. That's the thing that comes to my mind is like, do we or do we not believe this God? Do we believe that he can provide for us, or do we believe that we have to provide for ourselves out of our own wisdom in violation of his mandates? He says, I will provide for you. Will God or will God not? And I think is the appropriate stance for a Christian preparedness and community action in the sense of, yes, we'll stockpile water for you and we'll stockpile weapons and gold, you know? Or is it to say, you know what? We are persons of faith and we can stand here right now and say, our God will provide for us and we will walk through this with confidence and without panic, which provides more for the society and for the community.
I don't see them as mutually exclusive. I don't think preparedness and panic and worry go hand in hand.
Okay.
I think you can prepare while meeting with God and thinking about how do you love your community, your neighbors, and not about panic and hoarding, you know. And I don't know. I don't see those as being mutually exclusive.
Except, why are we preparing? Is it not because we're worrying about future? Where it says, you know, for example, Paul, Philippians: be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which passes all understanding, will keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. You know, it says, be careful about nothing. I mean, that's very, very plain. And what kills me is that we as Christians are sticklers on the words of Christ and the words of Paul. The Bible says it, I believe it, that settles it. You know, this is a mandate for action, you know. And we quote the Sermon on the Mount over and over again. These mandates of Christ say about divorce. And in the same tractate, he says more times, don't worry about tomorrow, than he says, don't be divorced. And yet we would live and die on the one, and we blow the other one off. Are we or are we not thinking about the future? Because that's a command not to think about the future.
Not to think about the future or not to worry about the future?
Give no thought. It would be anxious care, but, you know, anxious thought is
a
connotation.
But you prepare the day before for your sermon on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
You're thinking for the tomorrow.
In some sense. I think for me it's that it is a battle to make sure that I have no stock in that preparation, but that I say, I'm going to jot some notes down. I'm going to think of some concepts, and it's not that this is going to make me ready for tomorrow. It's that this is something I have beside me,
as I go there, and I might get up there, as has happened before, lay my notes and my Bible down, and feel like the Lord says, don't talk on that, talk on something absolutely different, and throw it away. It's that I do not in any way trust that that is going to make me safe for the morrow. But I think the issue for us as Christians, especially about the Y2K thing, is that we say, in order to feel safe, in order to relax, before I can relax, I must have water. I must have food. I must have red wheat stored in dried containers. And I will not rest in my God until I first rest in my gold, in my water, and in my wheat. You know, and my trusty Winchester 3030, 9-4 3030, the $199, you know, Kmart. Beware, I know ching ching pow, you know, ching ching pow. But you know, it's like what strikes me is that my God is the thing in whose presence I will relax and trust. And if my God is my gold, if my God is my water, my food, like Paul says, whose God is their belly, whose glory is in their shame, then I will rest when I have food and water and gold and guns. Or I will rest because the presence of my God is with me and I don't need those other things in order to relax. I think that's the question that faces us. In whose presence do we relax? Brian, you're a family man and a healthcare professional. Mm-hmm. And Jay, you are a student of human nature. Is there not something that is deeper than our computers in the depth of our human existence in which we can rest, that humans for thousands of years have lived very, very basic lives and survived, and that somehow that's the context in which Abraham walked with God, Noah walked with God? There has to be something in the human, in the Christian human endeavor, that means we walk with God confidently, at peace, in serenity, in the face of crisis.
Take away all the computers and all the gadgets, and you have relationships. And first and foremost, obviously, to us in this room and to those who know Christ, it's the relationship with Christ, the peace and the comfort that surpasses all understanding that brings to one's life. And under that, our families and those we love.
And I think you bring up a good point that perhaps what Christians are afraid of most is the realization that their relationships aren't there when all the computers and the systems break apart, the communities are broken because we've invested so much in computers and things.
Awesome. Thanks so much for being on the show. It'd be great to have you guys back on and talk some more about this when we have some more time to address these issues. I feel like, again, as we always say, we've just touched the beginning of this and our 30 minutes is up. Thank you both for sacrificing your time to come on the show. Jay, thank you for yielding your expertise in two fields, and Brian, for yours in healthcare software and your perspective as a family man, which I wish we could have gotten more to. But we will have you on again, hopefully, with that work. Both of you on, and we'll talk about more from these perspectives